Okay.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to this meeting. We have some apologies to record. The Deputy Minister Siwela won't be in the meeting. We have received her apology because she is attending the Cabinet Committee on International Relations. So she will not be with us today for that reason. We were supposed to start with the Stats SA, but I'm informed that they are held up at the gate. So GCIS must get ready now. Over to you. Honorable Lissom.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Good morning, colleagues and honorable members. I would like also the meeting to record the apology of Honorable Joy Maluleka. She's attending her principal committee, then she'll join us later. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Yeah. Maluleka. SG,
my apologies.
I'm told that you are ready. You can take the... I don't want to say you must shoot because he might kill us. He must... Honorable Mtembo?
Chair, whilst the SG is getting ready, let's welcome this opportunity to appear before the committee of Parliament. We really appreciate.
Sorry, Honorable Chair, I'm sorry to do this. Can we have a quiet, because the meeting has already started. We hardly can hear the minister. Thank you.
Sorry for that interruption, Minister. You can continue now. Everybody's quiet.
Thank you. Thank you, colleagues. We felt that we must just take the opportunity first to appreciate that we have been called here to come and account on what we will do with the allocations that have been made to us. We are here ready to make these plans of all our entities available to yourselves. Of course, again, just to explain a few matters, Chair. The first one being that you have already said that the Deputy Minister in the Presidency has had to go and attend some important meeting because we have a submission that we are making that concerns the Sustainable Development Goals. So we are making to the Cabinet Committee this week so that next week it goes straight to Cabinet before we report to the United Nations on how we are doing as it relates to the Sustainable Development Goals, SDGs. So that's why she's not here. But as soon as she concludes her business in the Cabinet Committee, she will join us. That's the first item. The second area that we wanted to raise with our colleagues will be aware that the President made some determinations recently. Amongst those determinations that the President made was to include Brand South Africa, GCIS, and also Media Development and Diversity Agency in the Presidency. All along, these three entities were housed under the Department of Communications. They will now, as of the start of the sixth administration, they will now be housed under the Presidency. But in terms of the vote, of course, the Presidency vote is vote one. That's the debate we'll have on the 17th of July, led by the President. So we are just saying to colleagues, these three entities will then be part of that debate in the Presidency vote on the 17th. Of course, which then necessitates that colleagues here on matters that relate to these three entities, Brand South Africa, Media Diversity Agency, and GCIS, as far as a debate on those entities is concerned, that debate will be part and parcel of the presidency debate on the 17th. If colleagues can then make themselves ready for that debate. The others, of course, State South Africa, we are well aware that the debate on State South Africa is taking place on the 9th next week. If I'm not mistaken, the 9th is Tuesday. The other debate that is related to the work, our work, is the debate on the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation, DPME. And that debate takes place on the 10th. So from where we are seated, this engagement is preparing all of us for three debates. One debate on State South Africa on the 9th, other one debate on DPME on the 10th, other one debate on the presidency on the 17th. Just these are just housekeeping matters, Chair, that I thought all of us should be on the same wavelength on. And thank you very much for giving us this opportunity.
Thank you. SG, if you are ready, you can take the floor.
Thank you, Chair. I'm ready, and apologies. We didn't know that the queues can be this long in this winter in Cape Town. I hope members are able to see the projections quite well. Again, thank you very much, Chairperson, and greetings to all members of the Portfolio Committee. Let us look at the work of StatsSA. We are looking at the mandate and environment, linking policy to statistics, our planning and performance, risks and financial position, as well as the strategic priorities ahead. Firstly, Statistics South Africa is a national government department that is mandated. It's not very clear that, I think...
Because of the light.
Because
of the light.
But it looks a bit hazy. So let's try the lights, but we have a printout for members to follow on printout as well, but we can try to give it. Is the projector, Chair? I shall just make sure all members have the printout copies so long. Statistics South Africa, Chair, is a national department that is accountable to the Minister in the Presidency, responsible for the collection, production, dissemination of official and other statistics, and it has to coordinate all the producers of statistics in line with the Statistics Act, Act No. 6 of 1999. It's not the only, the Act is not the only prescriptive that we have to follow. We also have to do this in line with the African Charter on Statistics, and furthermore, there are the United Nations Fundamental Principles of Official Statistics that guide the work of statisticians all over the world and statisticians in official practice. This we just brought just to show the relationships that we have, but I'll spend a bit of time on the role of the statistician general, the council and the minister, in a sense that the statistician general has to exercise independence at all times and execute the act, and of course is responsible for official and other statistics, whereas the council advises both the statistician general and the minister. And at any given moment, Chair, either minister or the statistician general may not accept advice based on whatever reason, and when they do so, they must always inform parliament as well as members of the public, especially the statistician general has to go public and inform the public that I couldn't accept for the following reasons. There are times when council is brought in here before committee and to provide their report, but their role is only advisory. There are a few of us, I think this slide minister has already covered, of those of us who belong to the minister in the presidency in relation to other government departments as well as StatsSA. Now, the role of StatsSA, and this is the last tranchere that we are talking about of our strategic plan. So we will soon be coming out back with another strategic plan for the next 5 years. But under this tranchere, we have indicated all over time that we seek to inform the nation. We need to make sure our statistics are trusted. We are a partner in statistics, a capable organization, and we need to focus on the leadership in relation to statistics. We have to occupy that leadership space. Now, furthermore, StatsSA at a glance, we are having 2,906 staff members, of which 1.8 are in head office and about 1,100 are in the provincial and district offices. This number, Chair, will have realized that keeps diminishing from where we were, from 3,300 in the last few quarters, coming down and falling quite seriously. And we have 630 work targets in our program, 2.3 billion worth of an annual budget, and our statistical products are 260 per year. What is happening, it's actually more than 260 per year. These are your main products, but we also have value-add products where we write stories out of our data and reports to assist the public so that they are not just thrown with just numbers in the way they are. So almost every day there is a product coming out of StatsSA. It's just that some get highest media coverage, some they don't get as much, and the users are out there to receive them daily. Let us look at linking statistics to policy, and here we bring some of our products. Firstly, we appreciate that the National Development Plan is our centerpiece, which directs us on which area we deal with on matters of statistics, and even positions us on a platform for international reporting and sub-national reporting. Now, the Agenda 2063 guides us at an African level, and of course, it's got all the 7 aspirations. And furthermore, at a global level, what we are tracking is the post-2015 development agenda in the form of the SDGs. And all the SDGs, we can readily say that South Africa can report on 73 of the peace and security, which was one of the most difficult ones to report on. On the others, we actually can report readily, and we have been reporting from the time of the MDGs. But specifically on social goals, we can report on 68% and 69% on economic goals and environment, 56.5. Environment is one of the still complex ones to measure. As Chair will remember, that developed nations coming out of the Kyoto Protocol have been becoming a lot more difficult in relation to cooperating where they pollute in developing nations, including in our sea lines, Chair. But again, on the means of implementations, we can report at about 30%. Going further, as we have indicated, that the National Development Plan sits at the center. At beyond nation, we look at our SADC protocols, our Agenda 2063, our SDGs, and at national level, the MTSF is our guiding plan in relation to sector plans and the provincial growth and development strategies, as well as the district growth and development programs, and the IDPs at local level become very critical when we deal with the integrated integrated indicator framework that we have produced as StatsSA. This integrated indicator framework assists us to make sure that we are able to service all these requirements, policy prescripts, without much challenges. The only challenge is that we still do not have enough data to support all of them. At local level, our biggest challenge is that because of our sample size, we usually take sample sizes of about 30,000 households. Those are not enough to report below a provincial level without us losing on the precision of reporting. Only during large-scale sample surveys we do report at the local level. And as Chair will remember, during censuses we have conducted 3 censuses in the democracy of our country, as well as 2 large-scale sample surveys. One large-scale sample survey in 2006 was 284,000 households, and the one in 2016 was 1.5 million households. That made it easier to report at sub-national level. Now, in relation to responding to the state of the nation as of 2019, we know that there are areas of economic transformation and job creation, jobs in relation to skills, education and health, consolidating the social wage through reliable and quality basic education, the spatial integration and human settlement, social cohesion and safe communities, of course, furthermore, the a capable state with ethics and the developmental states and a better Africa and a better world. I think it starts with a better South Africa, a better Africa and a better world. Furthermore, in relation to this, and Minister has already indicated the independent function of Statistics South Africa, is that there are issues that we measure, and those issues remain what we call core statistics. A nation must have those kinds of data attributes. So we have decided all over time to deal with issues of economic performance, employment, price stability, financial performance of government and the private sector, the primary, secondary, tertiary sector, as well as environment and agriculture. And this is when we look on the side or on the branch of our economic statistics. Out of that area, we have 220 statistical reports. And of course, in the social area, we have 45 statistical reports that we produce from time to time. Now, let us look at the economy. We have already gone out in the public to indicate that the economy went on a slump in the first quarter of 2019, having grown at negative 3.2%. While agriculture, and we can see agriculture has the biggest negative growth rate, but when we look at the behavior of the economy, we don't look only at the negative growth rate. We also look at the contribution to that negative growth rate. So on the right-hand side, we can see that manufacturing as well as mining were the biggest contributors in terms of negative 1.1 as well as negative 0.8 to the slump of in the economy. And of course, one of the things that we have picked up is that when you look at manufacturing, for example, the manufacturing of goods was able to produce jobs in the same quarter, especially where you are producing food where it requires less electricity. So we can actually say that in these two areas of manufacturing and mining, the areas that are heavily dependent on electricity had the biggest blow, and as we will know that we had power shortages at the beginning of the year. We look at every sector, and we want to say, here is the nominal share of that sector, and how is it a job creation? We can safely say that when we look at services, for example, sitting at a nominal share of about 24.7%. Its contribution to employment share is 21.9%. Look at trade, for example. It actually contributes more to the share of employment, far more than it's contributing to the economy. Another area is agriculture down there. Agriculture, the nominal share of agriculture is usually between 2 and 3%, but its contribution outshines its contribution on employment outshines its state and the size of its nominal share to the economy. And these are critical areas for policymakers to look at in relation to where we want to pitch and direct our economy so that we can respond accordingly to job creation. In relation to average monthly earnings, we can safely say that quarter on quarter, there was a decrease of 1.9%, whereas year on year there was an increase of 3.8%. So we can certainly say that in terms of average monthly earnings, the IME, including bonuses and overtime, declined in February 2019 from 21.3 thousands. And of course, when you look at these things, when you look at month to month, there might be some behavior. And when you look at the year, the whole year, some months may compensate, like your month of December, which sometimes compensate, and we can see the growth on the year on year, as many people take their Fed checks when it comes to December payments. Now, let us look at the economy again. The primary sector didn't behave very well, as we have seen in the previous slide, both in agriculture and mining. Agriculture includes agriculture and quarry, whereas mining includes mining, forestry, and fisheries. And of course, we can see that the secondary sector didn't behave well, of manufacturing, electricity, and construction. The tertiary sector, we can see that in terms of trade, we didn't behave well there. It actually went down. Transport went down. Only finance, government, and personal services have gone up. And speaking of personal services, when we look at it from the quarterly labor force survey, a slide we didn't bring, about a third of our working age people are in elementary jobs as well as domestic workership jobs. So that area of personal services does play a role, as all of us seated here surely have people who are busy minding our houses while we are at work, and we do pay them every month. Now, let us look at the social side. The social side, we look at education and skills, unemployment and job creation, health, social development, poverty, inequality, housing access, governance, crime, and public safety. And of course, out of those, we have 45 reports. Now, what we can say is that those aged 15 to 59 in our country account for 62% of our population, whereas those aged 0 to 14 account for about 30%, 29.5%, and those that are beyond the ages of 59 account for 8.5%. So we can safely say where the children are in terms of 0 to 14, where your 15 to 59 are, as well as where your above 60 are in terms of percentage share. It's very critical. We are always asked the question when we come to our QLFS, why are you including young people of 15 years when they are supposed to be at school? The Basic Conditions of Employment Act is clear on that one. Section 43.1A does direct us that it's illegal to hire anybody under the age of 15 years. So if a person of 15 years is not at school and they are looking for employment, we do cover them. But if for whatever reason they say they were at school, they were not looking for employment, we remove them from employment seeking. And we may not think young people are actually in employment. There are so many young people that we are picking up in our statistics that are in employment, are not of those ages 15 to about 19 and all the way 15 to 24 years. Now, let us look at poverty. In terms of poverty, we are saying that as of 2001, we could deal with Umsinga as with the highest headcount poverty. But we have actually given different colors for every province, as you can see, blue being the Eastern Cape, red being the Western Cape, and of course gray being Limpopo, green being the Northern Cape. The choice of the colors is random, so it's not deliberate. I think we would have wanted to see different colors at different places, being politicians here. Now, let us look at how poverty has behaved. Look at Msinga coming out in 2011. It had dropped headcount poverty by 20 percentage points, and that's a lot in terms of dropping. But furthermore, when we go down to 2016, Msinga actually dropped and Insika Yethu went on to overtake Msinga in relation to headcount poverty. But if you look at the way the bubbles are going, all the bubbles are going in a straight line. I want us to watch them. They are going in a straight line. Only when they start dropping down that the intensity of poverty starts to be felt less by those who feel it in terms of the average of those who are poor. So let us look. The bubbles are moving in a straight line. So we are just taking people out of poverty. But those who remain poor still feel poverty the same way. The Premier of Gauteng always asks this question, Mr. SG, but you are saying we are reducing poverty. But we don't. The people are still protesting. The fact is that those who remain poor feel it the same way. Now let us look at between 2011 and 2016. The only bubble that will drop the most is the city of Cape Town, as we will see. Now let us proceed to look at that. We can see that's the bubble that drops. The other areas are just moving in a straight line. Now, furthermore, let us look, we make available all the lines in relation to the food poverty line, the lower bound poverty line, as well as the upper bound. And these poverty lines, particularly the food poverty line, is those persons who have to wake up every morning and make a decision as to whether they can buy food or they can do something else with their money. Those in the lower bound are those people who have to make a choice between some basic needs and a bit of luxury. But those in the upper bound are the ones that have to make a choice whether they can buy a cell phone. They remain poor, but they choose whether they can buy a cell phone to talk to their son who's working as a migrant worker in some furthest places. Now, those in the food poverty line are 25% of our population up to 2015, and those in the lower bound, which we the National Development Program says that this is what we are tracking, the lower bound poverty line. And while it was declining coming out of 2006, 2009, 2011, we see an increase from 2011 to 2015 coming out of 36.4% to 40%. And of course, all the lines are behaving the same. So what we can safely say is that between 2011 and 2015, poverty has been on the increase on all lines that we are tracking as a nation. Now, furthermore, let us look at inequality. And inequality is very interesting because it shows us between the haves and the have-nots. And we can see that the inequality for whites and Indians is actually on the increase coming out of 2011 and 2015, while it's the same it remains the same for the black African, and for the colored, it's on the slight decline. And of course, your black African remain the highest, where inequality is the biggest of all population groups, while that of South Africa shows just a steady decline coming out of 2011 and 2015. Now, in terms of what the earnings are, we look at the income and expenditure. Look at the whites at the top. They are earning about 445,000 rands average per household, spending 350. So they have disposable income of about 100,000. Look at the Indian Asians. They are earning about 271, spending 195. They have about 70,000 of disposable income. And the colored population earning 172,000 and spending at 124,000. They have about 50,000 disposable income. And your black Africans, who still have, in the previous slide, have the highest inequality and the lowest, earning at 92,000 with a with an expenditure pattern sitting at 67,000. So they have actually less than 30,000 rands of disposable income to wiggle within such incomes. Now, the profiles of the poor and the non-poor households. in relation to the poor households and the household income, we can safely say that those that are poor, their household income is sitting at 46,000 and ownership of dwellings is sitting at 78.2%, and access to piped water inside the dwelling or on-site is 59%. And when you compare those that are poor with the non-poor have 86%, 87% actually, of access to piped water. Look at their income. Their income has a difference of more than 150,000 rands. The poorer ones are sitting at 46,000 rands. The non-poor are sitting at about 200,000 rands. And of course, it's the same. Access to electricity, flush toilets is the lowest for the non-poor at 40% versus 80%. So it's about double of the non-poor households. And their expenditure patterns, the non-poor earn less, they will spend less, 32,000. And of course, look at the expenditure patterns of the poor, the non-poor households is sitting at 151,000. We won't call them the rich households because not everyone in that non-poor cohort is rich. It's just that they are not below the poverty line. Now, social grants. We can see that at persons, at the personal level as well as households, social grants have been increasing coming out of 2002, coming out of about 12% at persons and 31% at household level, moving all the way to 44% household and 31% at persons. But one thing that while the grants are not sustainable, they are busy doing. Look at the vulnerability to hunger at household level as well as at personal level. It's actually declining. So the intervention with those social grants, while not sustainable, it's saving the majority of the people out of hunger. And those are the people, if you remember looking at the previous slide, these are your poorer households that qualify here, because none of us seated here would go and qualify for any social grant. Now, in terms of education, in terms of completion of grade 12 or national senior certificate, we can see that only three provinces in the form of Mpumalanga, KwaZulu-Natal, and Gauteng surpass the national average. The others, with an exception of the Free State, which sits at about the national average, the others are below the national average. And look at Limpopo in terms of obtaining such a qualification remains at about 21.9%. And here we are not talking about those people who are in secondary school. We are talking about everyone coming out of those households. And in terms of post-school, look at Gauteng and the Western Cape. They are the ones that are above the national average of that dotted line. Otherwise, the others, look at KwaZulu-Natal, for example. You have a lot of people that have completed matric, but they are not able to go and complete post-school qualifications. So they complete, and then they can't go forward. It's the same with Mpumalanga and the Free State. Only your highly urbanized provinces have such cohorts. Now, we are saying that in South Africa, in relation to labor markets, there are 16.3 million persons that are employed, and this comes from about 8 million that were employed coming out of 1994 to where we are. So the number has doubled. But as we employ people, there are new entrants that are coming, and as they enter the market, in relation to unemployment, we are sitting at 6.2 million persons. Those are the ones that account for the 27.6% that we have published. And what is happening here is that South Africa, together with many other nations following the guidelines of the ILO, has adopted the narrow definition as the official unemployment rate. We still have about 3 million of your discouraged work seeker, people who have looked for employment and are no longer looking. And furthermore, we still have another 900,000, almost a million, who didn't take up employment for other reasons other than being discouraged. So if we come to the expanded unemployment rate We are sitting at 9.9 million people, accounting for 38%. And when we publish our figures, we always publish these figures and make them public, while the headline number is the official unemployment rate sitting at 27.6%. Now, furthermore, in terms of health, we are saying that less than 17% of the population had medical aid and coverage, and only above the national average. The darker line is the national average. Those that were above the national average are only in Gauteng and the Western Cape. In relation to access to water, we are saying around 14% of households relied on communal or neighbor's tap as the main source of drinking water. But other than that, we also had 46% sitting with piped water in a dwelling, piped water on site about 30%, and let us go back to the work of StatsSA now. In terms of the work of StatsSA, this is our value chain. Our value chain looks at our input in relation to our engagements with stakeholders. So before we go out and conduct a survey, like a census, we go out and engage members of the public. Everyone wants their question to be included in the census. And if we were to include everyone's question, we would have about 4,000, 5,000, 8,000 questions, and it would never be completed during the census time. So we have to scale down. So we have to listen to user needs, but not only in the census, in all our household surveys. It's not only listening to them. We usually hear us being contrasted to people who take opinion surveys standing at a street corner. So people standing at a street corner asking, do you have a cell phone? Don't you have a cell phone? Or something like that. Do you like the issues of service delivery or not? Are much more different from us, because they will stand at a particular point. Some do surveys and research. They take representative samples. But what we do with our user needs is we also test them. So we go and do what we call behind-the-glass testing, where we ask questions and watch the behavior of our users. I'm afraid to say that when we ask people about employment and issues of marital status and income, people show a lot of discomfort. I don't know why, but they still answer this question. I can't understand why people, Chair, would have difficulty with their marital status. But furthermore, in our statistical process, one thing I can say is that we are going digital. So the statistical value chain, we are going digital, especially in our household surveys. The next census will be run on a digital platform. We will remember that when we ran census 1996-2001, it took us 2 years to come back with the results. When we ran census 2011, it took us 1 year to come back with the results. I can safely say in this house that the results of the next census 2021 will be in less than a year. It has to happen, because we are going technological. So our whole value chain in terms of input, statistical processes, output, outcomes and impact will go that route. But one thing that is interesting is that most of the work that we do as StatsSA ends at outcomes level. We are usually asked, can you come and deal with the impact and measure the impact? The HSRC and other research agencies should harvest our data and deal with that, because then they can comment on policy. We can comment on policy. But certainly there are times when we make our results available on our value-add product, which policymakers find quite useful. In terms of the organizational structure, we are sitting with a cohort of 8 DDGs, but only 3 of them are substantive. The other 5 are acting, so we have a lot of Bollywood, Nollywood there. But not only that, Chair, almost entirely our entire organization is in acting capacity, because we are not able to fill the positions. Now, what are the risks? Let's start with, before the risks, let's start with organizational performance. We have shared with, we have decided to share with Parliament from the times of 2015-2016, where our performance was sitting at 82% and expenditure sitting at 98%. And of course, women in SMS 40.7%, 1.2% people, persons with disability. And of course, the performance and the other indicators remained almost the same, while our performance improved to about 87%, and we remained unqualified in those years. But in 2017-2018, we were unqualified with emphasis, and this related largely to our compensation on employees, which we are not able to contain for purposes of the fact that the funding that we are currently receiving is not enough to even fund the warm bodies that are in Stetsese. And of course, by then, a total of 170 staff members had left Stetsese. Now, let us look at 2018-2019. We achieved 93% of our targets, 7% not achieved. Our expenditure had shot through the roof at 102, and our vacancy rate is sitting at 17.2%, 41% women in SMS, 1.4% staff members with disability. And going further, our financial performance, we had overspent on compensation employees by 92 million of the money that we were allocated by Parliament in the 2018-2019. And of course, projected over expenditure for 2019-2020 is about 78 million. Of course, National Treasury did allocate 75 million just to fill the gaps in relation to our operations so that we can hire our contract workers, because places like Gauteng and the Western Cape were starting to suffer seriously in relation to our operations. Other than the fact that they are difficult to enumerate because of the high walls, we were also suffering a lot. And if you look at Gauteng, it's got the highest population in the nation, as well as accounting for more than a third of our economy. So you cannot fail not to enumerate it. So certainly there was a move by National Treasury. In terms of vacancy rate, we have 605 posts that are vacant, 5 at DDG level, 12 at Chief Director. And in the first quarter of this year, 18 staff members have left Stetsese, but not only 18 staff members, some of who we have spent the last 20 years grooming and to be official statisticians. And of course, we haven't filled any single position from October 2016 except the position of the statistician general. We have increased our demand at national, continental, global and other levels. And of course, in terms of supply, we have decided to continue to uphold cost statistics and defend it at all costs. We have discontinued integrative statistical products where we used to do value add and environmental account products. What is happening is that we used to produce our cost statistics and then we would write reports to help, narrative reports to assist the public to digest our products and even make insightful findings going further beyond just the number that you see. We are not able to continue with that because we don't have staff members to do the work. So it's only numbers. Every now and then we produce numbers. We'll just say the GDP is growing or not growing at this level and leave the number there, but we can't unpack the number further in the form of value-add reports. In terms of our budgets, warm bodies are not affordable. We have suffered severe budget cuts, and of course, the CPI basket, and the CPI basket remains very critical, because we hear from time to time the Reserve Bank says they want to contain inflation between 3 and 6%. The Reserve Bank cannot and will not be able to measure safely if they don't have the CPI numbers from Statistics South Africa. But we do not have funding for that, and there is nothing we can do, certainly. So our poverty estimates, as you will have seen, that we have given, we are only giving the numbers up to 2015, and we are not able to go ahead. National accounts will be severely impacted. So in terms of our economy, our GDP, our global competitiveness, our balance of payments that the Reserve Bank is busy with, in relation to our trade, we will be impacted in no time. We are already seeing the risks starting to occur. And those risks, what happens as statistician general is that when there is a risk in an official statistical series that I see, I have to demote that series from not being official. And if it's no longer official, we are just saying, no, you can use it if you want to use it, but if you don't want to use it, you can't use it. And then, so those are the kind of challenges that we are facing. But in terms of skilling and in terms of people, we are saying that going digital, while our skills base is actually declining and our vacancy rate is increasing, we are saying that we want to go digital and we have to skill our staff members in the in response to the fourth industrial revolution, as in the future it will be easier to harvest data from other sources, administrative and otherwise. And then the key indicators, it's not only the GDP and the consequences for economic growth, it's not only poverty and the consequences for socio-economic planning policy and the determination of the CPI baskets, but there are also challenges in relation to the CPI in inflation targeting and monetary policy. In relation to vital events, we will have serious challenges in health policy and planning. We will have challenges in terms of the division of revenue bill, because if we can't estimate, other than the census, we do our census every 10 years, we do an inter-census large-scale sample survey, but what is happening is that we give mid-year estimates as we are going to go out before the end of this month, July, and give media estimates to say the population of South Africa is no longer 57.73 million persons, but it's whatever number that we will come up with, which we are not able to tell you now until we release it to the public. And we will be able to say that Gauteng and KwaZulu-Natal either remain as the most populous provinces or not, as of the time. In relation to employment, job creation will be seriously impacted, as we are aware that we watch employment at two levels, at household level using quarterly labor force survey, and we also use it at factory gate, where we look at the quarterly employment survey, where we look at what the firms are saying. Looking ahead, what is it that we are going to be doing? We are going to be driving legislative reform, maintain the quality of our core statistics, deal with integration, innovation, modernizing the statistical value chain, transform the organization and reform it, and roll out the integrated indicator framework to respond to all the areas of indication. And furthermore, we have a census that is coming in 2021. On legislative reform, this matter has been raised with the Fifth Parliament, and it was put on hold, so it will be coming back for further unpacking and downstream processes. The only challenge that we are facing now, we are actually engaging with staff members of the Auditor General, because as we are sitting now, the Auditor General has to audit your performance in terms of your core business, which they've been doing all along. But now, at this stage, they are going deeper into looking at our methods. And now, into looking at our methods, there are two things that are at risk here that we need to watch very closely. The first thing is that you could have a finding by the Auditor General to say, do the following in your methods. Now, the finding of the Auditor General is binding, and Chair will remember we have been raising this matter consistently. Once it's binding, it means we must implement it. But it might not be statistically sound. That is why Council is advisory. And as we are talking now, it will mean that we will have to change the legislation, because if the Auditor General goes into that route, the Statistician General can no longer be independent to make numbers independently. And that is has got serious, serious ramifications in relation to the work that we do, and the findings. If they make a finding on the GDP, for example, and say there is a challenge here, it means all the revisions that we have made are not valid. And once they are invalid, it means this economy will collapse in the country. So there are serious, serious implications in relation to this matter. We have raised it with the council. We are we have raised it with our minister. We are taking it up with the Auditor General, because unless the Stats Act is changed, if it's not changed at the stage, they can go as far as looking at performance. Statistical methods is not their space. Statistical methods remain. If there's a problem with a number, the number must be challenged by users. But once it's challenged by the AG, we will have serious problems. And we have already hit a challenge now with some of the areas, because we are saying on some of the areas we don't agree with this issue of the finding, and because these methods have to be internationally comparable. It cannot just be one statistician coming out and say, this one, you can change it. So it will have serious ramifications in this one. Chairperson, this slide says in the Helakwala, and you need to know about this one. Many of our mothers couldn't read and write. We are the only ones who wrote letters for them when we were growing up in the villages, when our fathers were working as migrant workers in Johannesburg, Rustenburg, and everywhere. Our mothers could not conclude the letter with, I miss you, writing to her husband, or I love you, because the kids are not supposed to hear those words. They will go deaf. They are not supposed to see those words. They will go blind. So the only way they could conclude out of respect for the children is Ndihelakwala. But let me assure you, Chairperson, it should not happen again where a cohort of people in our country cannot conclude a letter or their interaction with other members of society and be limited by social or structural issues. So when we look at statistics, our statistics tell the story of our history. I must assure you, Chairperson, the next slide is blank. I thank you.
Thank you.
This is what I'm going to tell them.
Yeah. The floor is open for engagement. Noted, Honourable Member. Noted, Makaus. Noted, Dr. Schreiber. Noted, Dr. Ntuli. I'm respecting you. Noted, the former. Who else? In that order. Yeah, you will be right. Yeah.
Thanks, Chair. I've got only two questions here which I would like to ask. How does Stats SA evaluate information from state-owned agencies? The other question is, how many people are passing on in terms of race, gender, and race, gender, and age? And then why? Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. SG, you mentioned in your presentation that by 2021 you'll be going digital, and looking at the number of the average of people leaving your organization, the ones that you said you've been grooming to become statisticians, are you not perhaps working backwards? Because people are leaving, you need to retrain people in order to catch up with the work towards 2021. And maybe just talk more on why people are leaving the organization? Is it the same reasons why you're still having a large number of senior managers who are still in acting positions and not appointed officially? Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. thanks very much for that very informative presentation, SG. I would actually just concur with my colleague here on the question regarding some of the reasons why people are leaving. Perhaps if you could expand a bit on your, if there's a retainment strategy, because you know you invest a lot in developing skills and then people take that investment elsewhere. At the same time, I think there's a slightly different perspective though on what you've said about digital tools. So Chair, I actually think it's quite positive to hear that there's some resilience here in the face of budget challenges, etc. And I think it's quite innovative that you want to use this new technology to assist going forward. But I do think it is a concern, as my colleague has mentioned. Then the other thing I'd like to ask you about, the reference to linking statistics and policy. When we look at the economic slides that he put up there, Chair, we see agriculture, mining, and manufacturing being, you know, the three big ones that are moving backwards. And I understand that it's a snapshot, but I would venture to say that if you look at the trend, you would see that it's not just one quarter where those three areas have been affected. Now, let me ask you this then. If we see that evidence, and then at the same time, we see that the policy discussion in those areas remain the same. And I'll name expropriation without compensation, the mining charter, rigid labor legislation perhaps. Those are policy directions that have been entrenched for a long time, that remain entrenched. And I wonder then what that says about the efficacy of your efforts to link the facts and the impact of policies back into the policy-making process. So then I just also, as a third point, second question then perhaps, you know, the poverty statistics you showed us, they were devastating, I thought. Since 2011, Chair, we've seen an increase in poverty on all indexes that you use. The city of Cape Town is the interesting one there that you mentioned, SG, which was declining in terms of the intensity of poverty. Now, I think I managed to get the distinction there between poverty rate and intensity. What is it, have you looked into perhaps what it was that affected that made it possible not only for the rate to decline, but for the intensity to decline? I think it's a crucial matter. If we're saying that poverty is increasing, Chair, then we must look at what it is that made the intensity actually decline in that case. And then my final question, the fourth point, would just be, you mentioned a couple of times that social grants are not sustainable. I feel like you might perhaps want to expand. That's quite a big statement in my view. It certainly hit my ear like that. So that's what I'd like to say. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just listening to the presentation, you know, really sort of hits hard what's happening in our country even more so. What I want to ask is, you know, the department's obviously battling with their budgets, in order to do what they need to do in terms of their staff component. And I am concerned that the auditors, the AG has given you an unqualified audit with emphasis, and it probably directly links to National Treasury giving you 75 million extra and still overspending from that point by about 28 million. And in the Auditor General's report, they're quite aggressive about that aspect. Now, I would like to know how you're going to be able to continue doing the work that needs to be done that is of utmost importance in terms of assisting in policy direction in order to stimulate this country. You know, what kind of methods are you going to be putting in place in terms of this matter and your staff component?
Honourable Ntuli.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, we welcome the presentation by SA. Although some of the issues are still alarming, starting with the House Matters of State SA to say, I wonder, because the minister is with us, I wonder what can be done to look at the increment of the budget of State SA, looking at the work, the huge work that they are doing. Now, the living of the staff tells us that one day this State SA will be collapsing. And Chair, in the meeting for me, to collapse State SA in the country is very dangerous, because that is the gist of our data as the country, other than be dictated, sorry to use the word, by more World Bank, having not put the stick deep as State SA, and will believe them. Starting there to say, how can we sort out the House matters? Not asking State SA to say, we've got a minister with us. Then moving forward to say, it shows very well in terms of education, the future of the country lies on its youth. Now, if the stats for education tells us that our young people after matric are not seen moving forward, yes, that means the country is declining. Then you link that with a poverty in our country to say, if our youth, if the stats for our youth from matric upwards is still that negative, that means our country has no brighter future. Now, I wanted to check something with State SA to say, how are these provinces taking these outcomes, particularly for education, to say, how do we see in future our young people passing matric, going to university, tertiary, etc. But again, I wanted to check something to say, the GDP at some stage will talk numbers, but safe to say the plight of poverty is still reflecting as it is. Now, I wanted to check as to, having done so much work, particularly with our agriculture, our environment, our environmental issues, I wanted to check as to what is our state that contributes to particularly environmental affairs in terms of poaching? Does it affect us that much along our seas and also poaching in general, like our, let me end there.
Honorable Soma.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Let's welcome the presentation. It's very exciting, but also it does say that if numbers can't lie, then the dream that we aspire to have then can be realized. Having said that, Chair, probably Honorable Minister, through your good self, Chair, is that can you actively lobby the powers may be to make sure that Stats SA does deliver on its core mandate as expected without being specific in terms of the areas? Because also my understanding is that the Stats SA product also does inform government allocation of budget and planning and other departments, and also to ensure that other departments, they do Stats SA through your good self, that they do make presentations before they finalize their budget. It will go a long way, in particular the economic cluster, as it were. Chair, are there any, that's my second, that will be my question now, which will be my first question, is are there any projects that you have to abandon them or short circuit due to financial constraints, and what would be the implications thereof? Not necessarily the quality, but not doing those projects. Also, second question is the electronic piloting for 2021 census. Have you started to pilot that so that there's a smooth running? But also coupled to that one, when you are in a process of moving from manual stats collection to digital one, how would you ensure that there's a smooth migration, so to speak? Also, is our personnel ready to take that, or our infrastructure and capacity to ensure that your products are not interrupted or are led to be questionable, the product that you'll produce? The other one, Chair, which I will urge that through the Commission and also the Minister, is that can we ensure that the legislative reform that we are busy with, that it does see itself to the ministry and also to ourselves as a committee, so that we can start working on that, so that we don't put Parliament in pressure in terms of finalization before the end of the sixth term. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Manelli. No, thanks, Chair. Maybe also joining other honorable members that indeed, the presentation was eye-opening and therefore welcomed. Maybe just to go back to a point you raised on social grants, and I'm sure I'm raising this point just from a point of how we communicated. That, yes, of course, probably at the level of employment that you seek to create and inequalities that you deal with, social grants being an unsustainable way. But if you look at it from a point of addressing a legacy that resulted in poverty, it can also be seen. I just wanted to check if that's the understanding of what you're trying to put forward to us. That it can also be seen as a serious intervention in the second economy in a way that it deals with the poverty, because probably that's the first area to target before we get to the next level. As I say, I'm just raising it from a point of communicating what I was saying to the nation going forward. And indeed, there will be the other slides at least would show that that when you get to the poor side of things, for as long as you don't deal with that level of poverty, to get to the next level, it's even difficult. So I just wanted to be sure that I got that message clearer from yourself. I think the other issue for me would relate to especially when you make the comparison between the urban provinces and the rural provinces, that in real life situation, as people get educated, they run to urban centers. In those states, how do you also look at those issues of people migrating from one province to the other in search of better opportunities? And in this instance, Western Cape and Gauteng may also be tapping from the other provinces in terms of what those people can contribute to those provinces because of the skewed way in which development has taken place over a period of time. So is it possible to also look at those trends so that we know when we say this is more prevalent in Gauteng, isn't it because you've added maybe 5,000 people from all over the country? As the person who comes from that province, I usually say we are a province of national, so because everybody is there in that province. So I just thought one should raise that point. But I think you've also brought in an important point, which I thought was important for the sectors of the economy and how decisions get to be made, especially the distinction between the growth in different sectors vis-a-vis which sectors are actually creating jobs. And I'm raising this thing because sometimes from a point of growth, like in previous years, there would have always been a cry that, yes, you may have growth, but it has not really taken people out of unemployment to a point of being employed. On how this gets used to help provinces and the sectors themselves to understand what needs to be done, and also how we are channeling resources, especially if our focus is an economy that grows, but it must create jobs, because growth alone will not be sufficient. I just thought, Chair, if those questions could be looked at. Thanks.
Thank you, Honourable Minister.
Chair, I thought that perhaps before the SG comes in, if we can just dispense of some of the matters that colleagues have raised. We are, of course, also concerned with the budgetary constraints that the SG has spoken to, which, of course, has got all sorts of consequences, including consequences of not being able to fill positions of those that have left the organization for greener pastures. We are told that, in fact, some of the big organizations who poach from us are organizations like the United Nations, because our people are well trained. As they get to the UN, they then hold very important positions, because that's the quality of expertise that we impart through this body called State South Africa. So we indeed hear colleagues, we will be intervening at the highest level to assist State South Africa. But to assist ourselves, by the way, if we can't deep stick and get these statistical reports, whether on the economy or on society, we won't know whether we're coming or going, whether this better South Africa we are trying to create for everybody, is it materializing? The only way we can know is through State South Africa, deep sticking, and then all of us get a sense of where we are and where we need to go, even in terms of planning. As government, planning as the private sector, planning as civil society, this information that comes from State South Africa is very, very critical. So it's an institution that we shouldn't allow to collapse. We will do everything in our power to speak to the Minister of Finance, also to the, which we have started to doing already, also to our head of state, the president, so that this institution doesn't collapse. But secondly, it remains independent. Though they politically report to ourselves, but in fact, they report in terms of the law that creates them. They report to the people of South Africa. So when a report is ready, they won't even go to the president or to the minister in the presidency or anybody. The law says they must report to people of South Africa on what their report says. So that we will indeed again commit to protecting their independence. Their independence will never be interfered with. We will protect it with everything in our vein, because protecting them is protecting ourselves, so that whatever reports that come from them must not be construed or be seen by anybody as having been sanitized. Therefore, we really appreciate what the SG has said. The SG started by giving information. In our view, it was important. We are speaking to members of parliament, public representatives, who should have a sense what's happening in the country. Even as we took that knock in our GDP, the 3.2% knock, what were those sectors that contributed to us contracting by 3.2%? So we thought it was quite good. Of course, SG, since you are correctly complaining about limited finances and budgets, it would have been helpful to give us an indication where are we allocating the monies and where are we having serious red flags, because then we will see it live, as they would say, that, you know, here are programs that you have, but in these programs we are running at negative. So that would have been helpful, SG. Of course, you have put a wonderful narrative, but if that narrative was also followed by actual figures for the 2019-2020 financial year, that would even have brought the story right home, so that all of us, as we do what we have to do, we are on the same boat of the difficulties that we are faced with. But again, we commit, I think this response to all colleagues, we will indeed be working with the SG to go to the highest office in the land to try and assist. We should also understand that even our endeavors, we are doing so understanding very well the economic conditions the country is in. Thank you very much, Chair.
Is that smile saying I must respond, Chair?
Yes.
Thank
you very well.
Thank you, Chair. I have brought three other colleagues, Ashwell Gineka, DDG for Marketing of Statistical Information and Communication, and the DDG and Ntabi Singh Makgatha. Where is she? Ntabi Singh. She's responsible for methodology. So everything that we do at StatsSA, the methods and how we look at them rest with her. And Celia de Klerk, head of our strategy, she's seated right there. But for the sake of time, I will respond to all questions, Chair, and the only matter that we will send to the committee is areas where we are spending. We will send an email to areas where we are spending and where we are underfunded. And obviously we'll send to committee, and accordingly minister has to receive such information. Now let me deal with the questions. In relation to evaluating state-owned enterprises, we don't do that because our job is not monitoring and evaluation. It's our colleagues at DPME deal with monitoring and evaluation. I'm not sure if they deal with those issues. But what we do is only we go to the households, we collect information. So we interview the households, get information. We also go to the industries in general, not specifically the state-owned enterprises. The people who are passing on what is taking the lives of South Africans. Firstly, coming out of 2006 up to where we are, we have seen a decline in the number of deaths. There are about a million persons, that children that are born every year. There are about we used to be sitting at about 700,000 deaths per annum. We are currently sitting at about 552,000 persons dying per annum. And out of those, in relation to the deaths of the population groups in terms of race, your black Africans as well as your coloreds are dying largely of communicable diseases, although the communicable diseases are starting to decline as well. We are actually seeing that your Indian Asians are passing on the diseases of lifestyle, your diabetes mellitus as well as hypertension and heart-related diseases. In relation to the ages and gender, your women are starting to show the biggest killer amongst women is diabetes, and it's actually going down from older ages. It starts to creep in at ages of 45. I shouldn't scare people who are 45 and older. I'm just presenting the numbers. Whereas as regards to your males, especially your black males, are dying largely of tuberculosis, and that starts at your ages of about 29 years, and so are colored males. Colored males, there is still a lot of violence in terms of deaths coming out of grievous bodily harms, assault and the like. Young males are dying out of accidents as well, which are non-natural causes. We can make available that report. It's a long report, but we have the numbers. In relation to going digital, how do we retrain when we are losing staff members? Firstly, we haven't hired, as I've indicated, a single staff member since October 2016. So that shows that the organization is actually on a back foot. And every staff member who retires, resigns, or passes on, they don't leave with their job. Their job still remains. And we still have a strategy to implement until the end of this tranche. Even if we come up with a new strategy, which will rely largely on digital work, we will need people to do the work. So we will retrain on those that are remaining on the digital space. But why are people leaving? The people are leaving because of greener pastures. Firstly, if you can't appoint for 3 years, it means you can't promote. So we haven't promoted a single staff member in 3 years. And this is because of our composition of employees. The staff members of StatsSA are very committed to their work and very loyal, but there are times where loyalty doesn't work when people see no opportunities for growth, so they leave. And where are they leaving to? Our younger generations, between your levels, ranks 7 to about 11, 12, are taken by financial institutions, your banks. They hire them and they can pay them. Even if we were able to hire staff members, we would not give counter offers because they give 2-3 times the salary we are paying them. So we would only have to hire afresh. Our older generations and senior colleagues at director, chief director, are taken by the World Bank, IMF. We lost two PhD colleagues to the World Bank at a very senior level. IMF, they are taken by Statistics Australia, Statistics Canada, they are taken by other agencies on the continent, even smaller islands like your, on the northern north of Australia, they recruit our staff members. So, and the United Nations does take a lot of them as well. And these are people that we have spent the last two decades building skills and expertise on them. In relation to the strategy to retain staff members, we have the strategy, but if you can't hire, it's like having a strategy you can't implement. So we just look at it every day and polish it, and then it looks. The 75 million rands that we received was on goods and services. It was not on compensation of employees. So we couldn't use it to offset our permanent staff member cohort. So what it did, it assisted us. Certainly we do appreciate such an injection from National Treasury. It was once off. So it's a once off allocation which deals with our operations. Linking policy to strategy. I'm like a Sangoma, Honorable. When I visit my Sangoma in Hlabuyalingana, in case you don't know how I became statistician general, he tells me that, Mr. Maluleke, you are being bewitched. But he doesn't tell me who bewitches me, so I must always be looking over my shoulder. So it's the same here. The job of statisticians is to give data. It's not to go into the policy space to say this must be done, this must be done. And there are reasons for that. Look at the economy. It behaves in a particular way. In one quarter, it could change seriously. If trucks are burning on the N3, it could affect the behavior of the economy in no way ever seen before. And we have seen it previously where the transport sector behaved in a particular way. Now, what is happening is that if the statistician general were to go into that space and start providing advice as to what should be done, and the numbers do not appear as when we go to measure, the statistician general would shy away from making the numbers available because then they don't conform to what I advised would happen. And once I shy away, I've lost my independence. And once the statistician loses independence, we have a serious, serious problem in the nation. But to be specific on the poverty in relation to Cape Town, we don't ask what is causing that, but when you look at the income and expenditure level, because when you deal with poverty as an index, you measure it from two sides. One is the income and expenditure survey, as well as the living condition survey. So your living condition survey will look at the assets you have, your whether you are able to access health facilities, everything, your education and the like. When you look at that, the Western Cape has a propensity, and in relation to a race breakdown, you can actually see that your black African colors and Indians, your whites have a higher opportunity in the Western Cape as they do in Gauteng than they do everywhere else in the country, and you can see that. Then in that slide that I've shown earlier of your income and expenditure, what the whites earn, because we also use income and expenditure to determine the whole issue of the poverty index. The Western Cape has a higher population of whites, actually. Even when they retire from other provinces, they come back to the Western Cape. So when you have a higher proportion and they are earning more and they are spending, they have a large, a big cohort of space, it does show in the income and expenditure. Whereas if you go to a province that has a larger cohort, late, say Limpopo, of black people, what they earn and what they spend, then the margins are very, very small. In relation to the question on the unqualified audit with findings and the what are we putting in place, firstly is obviously we are coming up with a new structure to say it should help us to respond, because we understand that certainly we will get money, but I don't think we'll get all the money that everyone, it's not us in the nation that are looking for money. If we ever get money, whether it happens in 2 years or a year, we will not be the only ones, but we will go digital. The only thing with digital is that you have to invest more first. The first investment because it's capital investment, and then after that it's sustaining that investment. But we think going digital is our way to go. The findings of the AG are largely more on the compensation of employees, where we just don't have enough money. And the fact is, we have staff members who are permanent staff members for the last 2-3 decades or 1 decade, and we have to pay them. So when we are given little money to pay, we just continue paying salaries and we go on the red on the payment. But if we were to stop, that's beyond us. It's a DPSA matter. If even retrenchment of staff members, it's not ours. It's another process that must be negotiated somewhere else. Obviously, Minister has dealt with what could be done by Minister. But one safe to say that StatsSA is amongst the best in the world. It's amongst the 5 top agencies in the world. When you talk about being a top agency, you gauge that by your ideas being sought after whenever there's an issue of international interest that must be resolved in statistics. Just last week, I was in Europe dealing, myself and the chair, the director of the United Nations Statistics Division, dealing with other matters. Just 2 days ago, we were in the Seychelles handing over the multidimensional poverty index report to President then Faure of the Seychelles, and it's work that StatsSA has contributed in. So we pride ourselves so much with such work. In terms of the provinces and the tracking, what needs to be done? The provinces do use our data. Statistics is not for our government is our main client, but we do address political parties. We have addressed the ANC during their Lekgotla. We address the EFF during their induction. We are working towards addressing the DA. We are working every political party. We are actually making efforts to reach them that before we even come, we can't be addressing others and others, we are not addressing them. The ANC and the DA do demand of us many more times than any other political party in the country. Almost all PECs of the ANC that took place, we were asked to go and address them, as well as the provincial executives that are meeting following the inauguration of the 5th administration. And statistics is a public good. We will continue doing that. And as we do so, we maintain our independence. Our independence will never be tainted by our addressing of political parties, and that we are very capable of maintaining that. As regards Census 2021, Madam Lisoma, we did the tests last year. So we do the tests. There are 3 stages before you go to full census that you must do. Test, pilot, rehearsal, and then full census. This year we will be doing the pilot, and then next year we will be doing the rehearsal at 12 months before we go to field. This helps us to understand issues that may come and surprise us. So we are able to prepare, because a census, you spend almost 5 years planning. So starting late this year, after October, Chair, we will be going out and be approaching policymakers, political parties, parliament, to say this is the work that we are doing. We need your assistance in the following areas, especially in reaching out to the society at large. We are experiencing problems in Gauteng and the Western Cape. The gated communities are just completely barricaded. It's not for us alone. There are times when in a gated community a crime happens and the police, South African police services, cannot go in, but private security can go in. And so this problem, and now South African police services have the authority. When they arrive in their blue light, they have authority. With us in the gated community, we rely on field workers. And these are the junior, the most junior of the junior. If the police can't go in, it's so difficult for our field workers to access those gated communities. So we rely on the society. We are moving our surveys from paper to digital. But when you deal with sample surveys, it's a lot more risky because you have to maintain Siri so that Siri is not... Siri is when you have started to have points like the GDP. It's got so many points now coming out of the days before the Second World War. You can't break that Siri by failing to produce numbers. It's the same with poverty, CPI. It has to come out monthly on a particular day. And all these dates are actually announced in advance. We have always often heard from policymakers to say, Statistician General, we hear that you are releasing QLFS tomorrow, and we know that there is a debate in Parliament on the following issues. The Statistician General works with a statistical calendar. Won't work with a political calendar because there are rules that bind us. How many days after collections should we go out with the results? If we fail to go out, because we are a member of the SDDS, Special Data Dissemination Services, we must inform the IMF and in some cases the World Bank. The moment we inform the IMF that we are failing to release our data because of other issues other than quality, it means that then the ratings of South Africa start to change and its standing. Whereas when we release, we sustain that space, number one. Number two is when we get our quality wrong, we are the first ones who must go public. Once the users say, without your numbers, and we look at our methods, they are solid, maybe there was something in collection, we must go public and inform the public of South Africa that here we got it wrong. Now, as regards the QLFS, we can't go into full digital without holding steadily on paper and digital. We call it parallel surveys. Because on sample surveys, no statistics agency in the world can plunge itself into a new form of collection without going digital. I think the last 2 points on social grants. Social grants, certainly, what is happening is that, because social grants, why they are not sustainable is, look at children, for example. You grow into that, when you become 18, you have to go out. So you have to wait until you are 60 years to get mudende. And our data does show that income of persons starts declining a lot more drastically when they are 60 years. So we have a society of people who are waiting to grow old every day so that they can get mudende, because that's the only way. So it's not sustainable because there's a certain cohort that you don't cover, and they must be in employment. Yet when we look at employment, they are unemployed, especially your black African women and young people. There are 10.3 million persons of the age cohort, 15 to 24 years in South Africa. 3.4 million of those are not in employment, education, and training. They wake up every day and sit. So this issue of not being sustainable, it does raise a challenge. In terms of your rural, urban, and this is my last point, your rural, urban issue. Firstly is that your people out of the Eastern Cape are moving out in larger numbers to the Western Cape. Initially, it used to be working age people, 15 to 49. Now, what is happening with the Eastern Cape is we are even seeing children following their parents, and we can see it in the data. Whereas in Limpopo, your largest, Limpopo is the biggest contributor to Gauteng, and people aged 15 to 49, if you don't believe me, I'm one of those, but I'm just a small number. But not only that, in Limpopo, it's only 15 to 49. The majority of them are remaining, and the discouraged work seeker in Limpopo, Limpopo always returns your lowest unemployment rate equal to the Western Cape. But when you look at your expanded definition, it shoots up to almost that of the Eastern Cape. So there's a problem because people are remaining there, but they don't have jobs. Then, on the other hand, 50% of your international migrants choose Gauteng as their destination. So for that reason, the population of Gauteng has even overtaken. In 1996, the population of the KwaZulu-Natal was the biggest. Now, the population of Gauteng is the biggest with 14.72 million as of the 1st of July 2018, and the population of KwaZulu-Natal is 11.38 million, 3 million less than that of Gauteng. But it's not only that. In 1 year, 2017 to 2018, households have increased in the country by 472,000 households. Of those, a third, 175,000 households to be exact, are only in Gauteng. Chair, the story of numbers is so big. We can spend, we might want to find a day where we spend the whole day. We just brought snippets. The numbers are so great. Some of them can fit safely in my brain to remember readily, but most of them will require another presentation, Chairperson. I thank you.
You have noted some of your team members to respond. Which is the next?
That we will bring.
You dealt with. Everything.
I said we will submit a written only on the gaps on the budgets, areas.
Okay.
But otherwise, for the sake of time, I decided to respond to everything.
Okay.
They are doing the work. Whatever I'm presenting, it's them who have done this work. My job is to be the face of the SSA. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Just one follow-up, Chair. Chair, in terms of the numbers, the population of Gauteng increasing and the population of KZN decreasing, of which causes a lot of damage in between, particularly for government, your equitable share will totally change your grants, national grants will change, etc. Is there any verdict as to what are the causes for this decline in KZN and for this increase in
Chair, if I may quickly respond to that, it's not declining. The population of all provinces are steadily increasing. It's just that the one for Gauteng, in the past, when in 1996, Gauteng had about 6 million, and KwaZulu-Natal had about 8 million. So it's increasing steadily. It's just that Gauteng has overtaken it for reasons that in-migration for Gauteng is higher than in both internationally and locally. They are receiving a lot more people than what KwaZulu-Natal is receiving. But the other problem is that the other problem that we are seeing is that while it's not increasing as much, the fertility rate for KwaZulu-Natal is relatively higher than that for Gauteng. Actually, people in Gauteng are not having children. They are having just replacing themselves. You have two parents, they have the fertility rate for Gauteng is 2.4. So you have two parents who are having two children, they have just replaced themselves, so they are not having children. Whereas in other provinces, in KwaZulu-Natal and the Eastern Cape, we can see. So Gauteng is not benefiting from a fertility rate. It's benefiting only from in-migration. And we don't use men as a measure for fertility because men are never reliable on the number of children they have ever had. We use women. We use women. There was a case that Madam Lisoma Eshwell just reminded me in relation to...
That statement is career limiting.
Eshwell just reminded me what are projects that we have stopped. The IES Income and Expenditure Survey, the Living Condition Survey, they don't contribute to us measuring poverty. They also contribute to us looking at the basket of goods. Because when you look at what people are earning and are spending on, you are able to recalibrate from time to time what they are actually spending on the side of the CPI basket of the goods and services. But as regards the career-limiting statement, Minister, I must say that I'm only saying what the statistics are saying. Now, the minister must go and fire the statistics and leave the statistician general. I thank you.
Thank you. We have concluded that one. Now let's get to GCIS.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. After the numbers, I'm sure you will be happy to know that there's less numbers in my presentation. May I just first use the opportunity to just congratulate all the members. We are seeing it for the first time. My name is Pumla Williams. I will be leading the team that will be presenting the GCIS. I am accompanied by my colleagues at the back, the three acting DDG of Corporate Services, Kitumetse Simakane, and the acting DDG of Stakeholder Engagement, Mr. Michael Curran, and Ms. Tasneem Curran, who is the acting DDG for the content processing. We also have our CFO, Mandla Langa, who is also part. I will do most of the presentation, Chairperson, and they will assist me with the responses. And I don't know who's going to put it up.
Is the presentation, is it up?
Is it up? Will we connect?
I don't know in which folder it is.
I will assist. I have it.
No.
I don't know.
Just on the memory.
Oh, it's a memory stick.
With the GPS. Let's do that.
No, I think it's one. Are you sure?
In the interest of time, can you present on the hard copies while you are busy setting up?
So that we
are not lagging behind in terms of time.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think I will do that. Chairperson, the story of GCIS is started by the constitution of this country. The Section 195 compels the government of the day to ensure that South Africans are informed so as to take their own decisions. We are then set up in terms of the constitution that provides that we should have a structure in government that will ensure that there is communication and there is information sharing with South Africans. The second area, I think, where our legislative mandate is also guided by the normal public service regulatory framework, the PFMA, the public sector magazine.
Sorry, sir. Okay.
Thank you. The second legislative is the PFMA, the public sector, and the other legislative that has pointed out in the presentation.
Excuse me, comrade. We don't have that one. I don't know if it is only me. It's only me. Okay, you can continue.
Chairperson, the mandate of the GCIS, I think flowing from the legislation, is the fact that we are meant to drive a coherent messaging across all the spheres of government, national, provincial, and at the municipality level. We are meant to ensure that the executive is interfacing with the communities, because I think our belief is that the interface is almost critical, contrary to interacting only via the media. But I think our mandate is to make sure that the executive directly interfaces with the communities. We are also responsible for ensuring that there is professionalism in the discipline of communication within the public service. So we also drive the communication training, but also importantly to the setting up of the communication standards for all the communications practitioners in the public service. And also we are responsible for proactively responding
on issues that affecting government that we will probably either get it via the media or also via the communities. I think we are responsible for that. What are our strategic objectives? I think I will move on to talk about our strategic objectives.
I see hands. Yeah. I think I must speak on behalf of those hands because I understand why the hands are up. We don't have what you are presenting.
The one that you say?
Yes. And I'm also advised that you did not even send it to us.
We sent. To the office of the minister.
Oh.
God.
Now. Yo. Okay, let's. This is our first engagement. I think I must not be hard on you, but next time, this must not be the case. Continue, Comrade Williams.
Thanks. I think we're sorry about that because we thought it has gone through. But yes, I think I will try and speak a little bit slower so as to be able to take the honorable members along. I will start with this. I was saying that our mandate is from that, and then I will just zoom in on the strategic objectives of the GCIS, which are three in essence, which mirror the branches as we have them. I think the first one is the strategic objective of ensuring that we are a cost-effective and a compliance business focus unit. Chairperson, this strategic objective talks to the areas of corporate services. I think it is meant to ensure that there is full compliance with the PFMA, but also importantly, it is responsible for the transformational engagement of the department. We are meant to make sure that the gender parity within the organization is compliant. We are meant to make sure that the procurement that we do is sensitive for small business ownership. It is also meant to talk to how soon do we pay small businesses. This is an area that we are concerned about. It is also an area that we talk about how do we make sure that we do not overspend or underspend in our budget. And that's what we mean in the corporate strategic goal. The second strategic goal talks to the informing of the public and to educate, because we believe that the communication that does not educate with a view of making sure that South Africans take their own decision, we have to make sure that they are informed. And this strategic objective, Chairperson, talks to the products that we produce. It talks to how we interface with the communities. It talks to what research tells us. I think Statistician General was talking broadly on research. We conduct a lot of perception surveys that tell us what South Africans want to know in terms of our information, what is it that we consume, and where are they residing. Because I think this strategic objective, Chairperson, has become critical because we produce a lot of products, and what we do is that we then get informed by what the segmentation models and what the research is saying, that the people in the Northern Cape, for instance, what kind of information are they yearning for? And that this is the strategic objective that has that unit. It also has the unit that talks to what, how we package the information for the various clusters of the government department. And lastly, the strategic objective of maintaining and strengthening a well-functioning system. Chairperson, this is a strategic objective that ensures that there is a coherence in how we communicate with the provinces and with the municipalities. It is headed by the branch that we call stakeholder engagement and coordination. It also ensures that there's coordination across the government departments. This branch normally coordinates that work. The next slide, which I would want to go into, is the one that talks about the GCIS structure. Chairperson, just for ease of reference, what we have done, we've color-coded it. You will see we also have the challenges of all those raids are acting positions. There are no there are people who are acting. But what is concerning, Chairperson, that we would highlight there, all that red block is what we call the engine of GCIS. These are people who are content. These are people who are doing research. These are the people who are writers. Because the next, the one of stakeholder engagement and coordination, they package, they interact with the communities based on the content that we have packaged in that particular block. And then you will see that all the DG positions are acting, in starting with mine at the top. But that's the situation that we are finding ourselves as a department. The next few slides, Chair, they will be talking on what is it that we will be doing, and maybe highlighting just at a high level, because I think the whole presentation or the report, the annual performance plan is provided to yourselves. What we would like to highlight there, I think it's the requirements
Chair,
that...
Sorry. Through your chair.
Honourable
Minister. I'm worried that why don't we, because if this presentation is not followed by colleagues having
content.
This content with them, being able to write what they want to follow up on, I don't think that will be helpful. My suggestion, if you agree, Chair, is that we go to a presentation that is with us here.
Yeah.
Then come back later, because it will not assist us if we proceed in this manner. Maybe let me also emphasize that what we have in our packs is what I signed as the foreword, and I see that is what also the DM signed as her foreword. So that's what came to our offices. But of course, Parliament would have required that apart from the foreword, the GCIS also table these APPs, because there are no APPs yet in our books. There are no APPs. So whilst they are sorting that one out, maybe we should go to another entity that is able to deliver whose matters are before us.
Okay.
So sorry again, Chair, for the intervention.
Brent, South Africa? Let me check first. Are the members amenable to this proposal by the minister? We are amenable. Okay, thank you.
Ironic that communication is not so good.
Okay.
Thank you.
But where is the
then, Brent, South Africa can... Honorable...
Chair, while we are waiting for Brent SA to give us hard copies, I would like to urge the TLOs also to make sure that we get the report 5 working days before the sitting of the portfolio committee. It will help. Moving forward, at least now we have laid the foundation. If there are any amendments in the presentation, please do also direct to the pages that you have taken out or added, so that we also get empowered and well prepared for the committee meeting and add value in our discussion. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. I would just like to second that with an example from yesterday, and that was just a joke on the communications, but an example from yesterday with we had the PSC there as well. There was a pertinent issue in the full APP, in the PDF document that we received, regarding legislative changes that they wanted to discuss, which was not in the presentation that we got. So if we had only gotten the presentation, perhaps we would have missed a pertinent issue. So, I mean, it's understandable, things are, we're all still adjusting here, certainly me and my colleague from the DA as well. But I do think it's a very good proposal if we can in future ensure that we get the presentations ahead of time, but I think also the full documents where there are full documents, so that we have some time to go over them. Sometimes there are things that jump out which are not in the presentation. Thank you.
Honorable Tim?
Chair, my understanding, again, it might be an archaic understanding, is that all entities and departments have tabled their APPs with Parliament. Now, that is the document that must serve before us. What was tabled with Parliament. So, and again, I will urge all colleagues that if that matter, if the GCIS tabling is with Parliament, let's go and find it in Parliament, Secretary of the Portfolio Committee. Let's go and find that document. But if they have not tabled, then it's another problem. Because we can't speak to them when that matter is not before Parliament, when it has not been 80 seats by Parliament. What we then need to check, what is it that has been 80 seats from GCIS? If their documents are not here, unfortunately, we are disempowered to deal with them. Now I'm putting myself in your area of work. That's the problem of being a chief whip for too long.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and members. My name is Thuli Manzini. I'm the acting CEO of Brand South Africa, and I can confirm that we have tabled, and I can also confirm that we have tabled a word document because we cannot here present the actual word document, yes, with the four words. So the presentation that we are presenting here today is a presentation that is a, like, you know, slides talking to the actual document that was tabled by the due date. With me, I have the CFO on my left, and I have the marketing officer, and I have the director CS. And I also have the company secretary. The reason I've brought them in also to be able that if there are questions related to their areas, they can be able to do so. But I will be taking the members through the presentation. Slide one of the presentation is what we'll be dealing with about what is Brand South Africa and our strategic goals, our strategic programs, Brand South Africa's budget, our priorities for 1920, the key indicators and the targets. What is Brand South Africa and who are we? Brand South Africa, we were established in 2002 and we were established as a trust, hence our board members, we call them trustees. It's an official agency appointed to manage the reputation of the nation brand. And its official custodian, we are the official custodian of the nation brand. And our primary focus is to develop, implement proactive, coordinated marketing, communication, reputation management strategies for South Africa. So we market South Africa domestically and also international. Its main objective is to market South Africa to domestic, like I've said, international audience, positioning South Africa as a competitive investment destination and inspire and instill active citizens among South Africans. The strategic intent, if you see, there is a house there. What does this house mean? I'm summarizing the house. I'm not going to read sentence by sentence. Brand South Africa's mandate is represented in a house. So wherever I go, I just give the house. You understand the house, you understand who we are. At the root of the house is sound governance and organizational effectiveness and efficiency to ensure that this house is built on solid foundation. And then you then have three key strategic areas of focus, which is your reputation management, communication of the nation brand, marketing of the nation brand. Lastly, the roof of this house, it symbolizes the bigger picture of the mandate to manage the nation brand reputation, the nation brand reputation domestically and international. So this house, it summarizes who we are, our the roof, the foundation, and all the rooms. Room 1, reputation management, you get to room 2, you get communication, you get to room 3, you get how we then market this country. Like I have said, we are the PR agency of South Africa. So whatever that happens about this particular country, in terms of statements that we make, whether it's in the media, the damage, whether it's damaging or the other way around, we as Brand South Africa, we're supposed to be there to make sure that this country is properly positioned so that investors can come to South Africa and invest. Investors must have reasons why must we invest in your country when ABC is happening. So the statistics that we were listening to, the issues of your poverty and other issues, these are some of the things that we then take and we need, we always strive to tell a good story as Brand South Africa. Brand South Africa strategic goals. Strategic goal number 1 is the sound governance, high performance and optimal utilization of available resources, and that is the second one, like I said, I'm not going to read sentence by sentence because it's there in the document that was submitted. But of importance is that these strategic goals are aligned to the MTSF. Like on 12, we have an efficient and effective development-oriented public service, and we have aligned that with the sound governance. And the second one is the proactive, coordinated reputation management of the nation brand. And where do we get that in the MTSF? Because we are responding to that. We get that in number 4, goal number 4, which is decent employment through inclusive economic growth, create a better South Africa, a better Africa, and a better world. And on 14, a diverse, socially cohesive society with a common national identity. The third one is the proactive coordinated communication of the nation brand values system and proposition. Because as a brand, if we are a brand, any brand, you need to be able, people need to understand what are your value system, what do you stand for, what is your value proposition, what is it that you do. And we immediately, to align to the national priorities, is to we have aligned it to number 4, 11, and 14. Also, the fourth one, the proactive and coordinated marketing of the nation brand and the nation brand identity domestically and international. It's also aligned to the MTSF and goal 4, 11, and 14. The budget of Brand South Africa, the chunk of our budget, because we are about marketing, it goes to brand marketing, communication and reputation management, and also to stakeholder relationship. So stakeholder relationship is also part of brand marketing. And the figures are there that in 1819 it was 85 million, and 1920 87 million, and for stakeholder it was 18 million, and now it is 17 million, and for administration 97 million, and now 2 million. And in terms of percentage, the whole chunk, about 51% of our budget, it goes to marketing, communication, and stakeholder. And then, and I mean, that can be justified because we are about that. That is our existence. And about 49%, it goes to administration. Here I'm explaining about the budget, that a domestic campaign promoting active citizenship and constitutional awareness as part of outcome 14 deliverables will be intensified in 2019 and 2020 financial year. This will be done through integrated marketing campaign selling South Africa to South Africans through the entity Play Your Part flagship project. We have a project that we call Play Your Part. As you can see, I do have a pin here that says Play Your Part, which we will also be able to give to members, and Minister does have that pin as well. This is where we are encouraging South African that play your part in whatever space where you are. Be patriotic about South Africa. Be there, be counted, be seen, be known, and say good things about this particular country. And I'm not saying that the bad things we need to sweep them under the carpet, but you know, there are other countries, there are people, when, even when they come to South Africa, say about their countries. To see that South Africa, we are also doing very well. We have been invited we keep on getting invitations by other brands. Your brand Eswatini, your brand Ghana, your brand Kenya. They call us to say, come and tell us, how do you do this? This is a good story to tell. We've recently been asked by Parliament as well. We are assisting them with their communication strategy to brand. So branding is what we like to do, and we enjoy doing it, because we see that if people keep on asking us to assist them with their brand, there is something right that we are doing. And this project has progressively, this is the play your part, gained recognition as an important outreach initiative for us, inspiring, empowering and celebrating active citizenry, and ultimately lifting the spirit of the nation. As a result, expenditure in the brand marketing project is expected to increase in activation costs and marketing activities such as media campaigns. And if there is anything that is happening in the country, or there is decline in terms of the issues of your economy, and whatever that happens that is giving the country negative publicity, then the issue of our budget, that's when we start using our budget a lot to try and salvage whatever situation that is there. The entity aims to have much more reach on Play Your Part movement. We have your Play Your Part ambassadors. There are people, how many ambassadors? Currently we have 350 ambassadors, Play Your Part ambassadors, and nationally recognized. You get recognized properly, you get a certificate to say you are a Play Your Part ambassador, and they get recognized accordingly. And we have our offices outside the country. We are in the USA, we are in the UK, and we are also in China. China is currently vacant and will be advertised, but yes, we are in US and also in the UK. There are South Africans that live abroad. So it's important that we encourage them. They must not forget about South Africa. And they must also remember that they sell this country positively. And all these national days that we celebrate here, it also happens that side as well. And also you can see our role becomes even more relevant during the elections also, because those are the people that also assist us to mobilize South Africans to make sure that they do what is right. The entity also aims to strengthen the use of strategic platforms to engage with the media and business influencers on matters that have a negative impact on the South African brand and investment drive. That is why you'll find us, whether they are in your investment conference, we also there. We have just now been with the president, went to Japan to make sure that we encourage investors to come and invest in South Africa. And our priorities for 1920, 2021 and 2022, because our understanding of the APP is also to come here and say we are contracting. We are saying these are the things we are going to do, because as we come to report quarterly, these are the things we said we are going to do by when, and we need to be able to give reports, you know, like real deliverables. One is to improve the nation brand reputation. This is what we are going to be doing now, and also the enhanced relation with stakeholders. And our stakeholders will be your civil society, will be government, and will be business. Continued tracking and monitoring of the nation brand performance against other markets. And also, this, we do a lot of research. We research, because the marketing, the communication, everything, there must be research. So we do research, and we get the statistics, and we want to understand, how do we fare as South Africa with other brands? How do people see us? And when next time when we are then called in to come and account, we'll be able to share the research to say, how are we viewed? We even did a research on how the normal citizens of South Africa see Parliament. That research is there. You can see that in terms of percentage, how we are then viewed. Intensify media partnership in order to improve the nation brand, and also promoting the nation brand awareness, identity, image, competitiveness and value proposition domestically and internationally, and also a cohesive approach when promoting and marketing the nation brand among the targeted stakeholders. And also, if you look at the key priorities that we have, the next column, it talks about the key performance indicator on what we would do to be able to achieve that. And lastly, we also added the impact to say we are not just doing this. If we, for instance, if we improve the nation brand reputation, this is what we're going to do on the Play Your Part, but what will be the impact? The impact is that they improve nation brand reputation and perception. And here it is about the different programs. Like we have four programs. Program one is our administration, and we have set ourselves to say for sound internal controls and good governance, our performance indicator will be the audit counter. Will be the issue of your unqualified audit opinion on financial statement, and also on high. Performing organization through the optimal utilization of technological financial, it will be your 90% overall organizational performance rating. I'm not going to be reading sentence by sentence because this is where we are contracting to say when we come back to say this is what we say we're going to do in quarter one, quarter two, and quarter three as we are expected to report where the APP is concerned. And the third one, on the second program, the brand marketing and reputation management, we say the strategic objective there is the enhanced understanding of the nation brand, and our annual target, one of them is the research report on performance of the nation brand. We need to have developed about 12 reports, and this is not a child's play because of what is involved in coming up with this. And also we must also have about 16 market reports that are received, how the market is performing, and also the approved annual SA Competitiveness Forum outcome report. And also on the improved nation brand reputation and perception among South Africans, there our annual target will be the 9 PYP activities implemented, the play your part activities that we implement. Also, the 10 activations utilized to promote constitutional awareness, because we are also responsible for that, to make sure that the South Africans are aware. And the last research we did, we found that constitutional awareness was at about 36%. And we really need to have a number that is above 50%. And also the 16 marketing platforms utilized for constitutional awareness campaign. On number five, the improved nation brand reputation and perception domestically and international, we would like to have 100 positive communication content pieces published. So we always publish these pieces about always when there is a good story to tell. We are there in the forefront to make sure that that particular story is there about South Africa. We don't always write about complaining about this and complaining about that. And 5% increase in users who engage with Brand South Africa content on its digital platform. We do monitor our digital platform to see that when something has been posted, how do we then engage with that? And also we like to see is the on the annual target is the 11 implemented media engagement activities to strengthen relations and liaison with the media. And on number six, the enhanced awareness of the nation brand is the 12 international platforms utilized to promote the nation brand identity, image, values, and competitiveness. And also, when I talk about the 12 international platforms, like I say, we do have people who are already out there. It doesn't mean that then we will see some increase in terms of traveling, because the people are there to be able to represent us and make sure that we get the necessary reports. And also the 13 Play Your Part domestic platforms utilized to promote the nation brand. And also on the cohesive approach when promoting the market, the marketing the nation brand among the targeted stakeholders is that we'll have 9 Brand SA-led nation brand alignment training workshop implemented in provinces. So we go to provinces to give this this particular training. And there are departments that are already asking us to come and assist them. Like your DPSA, they want us to assist them, to brand them, so that DPSA can be that DPSA that people I'll use the word scared of, you know, like to say when DPSA, they say this is the policy, thou shalt do A, B, C, and D. But we say it starts with you when you brand yourself properly. Then also leverage on the 3 stakeholder-led platforms to deliver the nation brand alignment training, and also the 500 new registration on the digital market portal. Like I say, we monitor that how do we get the number of people that are registering to be part of our digital marketers portal. And on number 8, strengthen the nation brand advocacy domestically and among South African living abroad. There we need 60 play your part, ambassadors' engagement online and offline achieved in promoting this particular nation brand. And also, we also expect to have about 17 GSA activations. And the GSA stands for, it is the Global South African, the citizens that are living abroad, so that they are not forgotten. And they really enjoy it when we have time and show you the things that have happened, whether it's in the UK or in the US. So I'm here now. Okay. And the next one is program 3, which is the stakeholder relations, enhance relations with stakeholders towards the promotion of the nation brand. Here we'll have 14 coordinated activities implemented in partnership with the private sector stakeholder, and also the 16 coordinated activities implemented in partnership with state institution and stakeholders, and also coordinated activities implemented in partnership with civil society, and also Brand SA-led market activities implemented, and the last one is activities implemented as strategic platform, like your WEF Africa, your WEF Davos, because we are the people there. Our role is very clear when it comes to that. And as I come towards the end, we have the enhanced relation with stakeholders towards the platform of the nation brand reputation domestically and international. And our target there is 5 activities implemented at the strategic platform that will secure speaking platform at other relevant international strategic events, and also stakeholder feedback platform on the nation brand performance. That is us, Brand South Africa.
Honorable Ndoli.
Thank you, Chairperson. And thank you for the presentation for Brand SA, which is very exciting. That also cautions us as the citizens of the country to be patriotic enough to it. But I wanted to check some of the things that has been highlighted by them in the presentation. To say firstly, the presenter mentioned the ambassadors that they have, to say how do they recruit those ambassadors, and whether are those ambassadors vetted as well, to say we recruit, and maybe if I can say the criteria they use for recruitment, because to be an ambassador of a country is a very serious sort of issue. Once you talk about South Africa, indeed, and once you do something on behalf of South Africa, indeed, that should reflect, that is the reflection of the country. That is number one. Number two, I wanted to check something, Chairperson, in the meeting, to say in terms of social cohesion, because she did mention if there are things not good enough that is happening to our country, sort of denting the country, etc., to say, is there any role that they play as Brand SA? Maybe some interventions. I know there are relevant departments, but if there are any role that they play in such incidents, like if I may make an example of, there was a big issue of xenophobia, etc., that was also denting the country, and the investment or that was also not attracting the investors to our country as well. And three, I wanted to check, Chair, to say when marketing South Africa, I know it can be overlapping to other departments. Do they sort of create or platforms or level some fields for particularly for our department or for the country, so that maybe for our products as well, or for our brand as South Africa, because the brand can come in various ways. You can have the brand in beverages, in food, in music, in whatsoever. To say, to like your China, you go. I was shocked to see that China managed to establish themselves. Even in New York, there is Chinatown. Chinatown. As you go to our there are China cities within the cities. In Durban, there's a China city somewhere. Yeah. To say. Do they create or level fields, maybe for such a programs in the the country, and also maybe if possible, the exchanging of programs per se, yeah, the role whether they can do that as Brand South Africa, because what they do is very crucial, because you can have your product, but because they are not known outside there, you, for instance, there is H&M here in South Africa, and yet H&M is not ours. But with H&M here, you'll find it the other branding, but with H&M in London, there's nothing from South Africa. No, I'm just checking. Thank you.
Honorable Tobeko.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, the presenter, as well. Like other colleagues have just been saying. Minus, I think, firstly, I'm covered by all member with regards to xenophobia and all that. My question then should be, or would be, do Brand South Africa have a yardstick of measuring its successes versus the negative reporting by some media rooms that South Africa is unsafe for investment because of the hot potato of land expropriation and accommodation? How do they see investors coming to South Africa as they are doing research as well with regards to the companies coming in to invest in our country? Thank you.
Honorable Mzipe.
Thanks, Chair. Yeah, the question that I would like to pose, my colleague there has already posed it, but he didn't pose it the way I wanted to. So I will pose it directly the way I want it to pose it, like as the Brand SA oftenly goes abroad. Yeah, I would like to pose this question: why Brand South Africa does not market the indigenous textile material, Khoisan clothing, for an example? This is to avoid white monopoly capital taking supreme role in the textile industry. Thanks.
Honorable Mukausa.
Thank you, Chairperson. Ma'am, in your presentation, you mentioned that you've got trustees. Your board members are trustees. I just wanted to understand their term of office and their appointment. Where does that happen? Because we see you on occasions, but we don't feel you on the ground. We don't look, we hear about you, but your work, it's not that felt on the ground. I just want to know their term of office, Where is it advertised? Where does that appointment come from? As you present, one thinks about the proximity of your office towards a certain political party or a certain office. Perhaps, maybe you must tell us if your thinking or your marketing, your work in general, is it not perhaps influenced somehow by a particular office? Are you that independent to actually carry out your mandate? Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Somo.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Okay, I don't want to be tempted to respond on other things. Chair, probably let me start by welcoming the presentation and also wish the Minister and his team the best luck in terms of the added responsibility. Equally goes to ourselves as well, because which means there's more work that we need to research and know these entities better. Having said that, probably just to pick up on Honorable Makausa's latter point, is to say, through your good self, Honorable Minister, if we can get a list of entities and which have got boards or commissions or trustees that their legal appointment processes warrants us as a portfolio committee to be involved, or parliament, so that across the board, Chair. Probably I should have raised that one even yesterday with DPSA as well. Two, Chair, for me would be saying, what is your relationship with the GCIS, DTI and DERCO in particular, in terms of ensuring that we speak one message with many voices, as it were? Sub-question of that also, is there any particular private sector that have requested partnership with Brand SA? Because they do also, South African companies, market themselves abroad. Thank you, Chair.
Dr. Strabo.
Thanks, Chair. Some questions along the same lines. I think one would be how you link with DERCO specifically, because there's obviously a lot of overlap. In my view, there should be overlap. But I also think I have significant sympathy, Chair, for the challenge that Brand SA faces. I mean, we should be honest about that. It's not an easy environment in which to operate. We just saw some of the presentations from Stats SA, and you know, if you present that to an investor, it's a difficult task to then reposition the brand. But I do wonder. I see in the plan that there's research going on. But can you share with us, perhaps, or maybe it's for a later presentation, what do different markets actually think about South Africa? To what extent can you nail down what South Africa's brand is according to X, Y, or Z? And then I would almost ask you, well, how would you respond? What would you say in one sentence what South Africa's brand is? And I think it can be sound like a simple question, but it can actually be a tough one. And I think then specifically we face a challenge in Africa. In my previous job, I had the privilege of traveling a lot throughout Africa, and South Africa's brand in Africa is in trouble. I think we often overestimate our own standing on the continent. I think the xenophobic situation, which has been mentioned a couple of times, is one important element of that. And of course, that a weak brand is not only relevant in terms of maybe making it difficult to attract investors, it also erodes your soft power. And I think that is something that we do see in Africa. It's my personal view, obviously, this. But I wonder if you can respond perhaps specifically in terms of South Africa's brand on the continent. My view is that we've gone, that it's been significantly eroded, and I wonder how we will tackle that. The final point will just be a question on linking with private sector entities, because private companies or entities can actually form part of a national brand. If I say McDonald's, everyone in this room is going to think the U.S. Then I or perhaps they'll think that lunch is close by. I don't know, that's another option too. But, you know, South Africa has potential in this regard. I think rooibos tea is one that immediately conjures an image of brand South Africa. But I wonder if you can say a little bit more to us about how you link with these kind of private brands, and then in terms of how they actually can play a positive role in promoting the national brand. Thank you, Jay.
Thank you. Welcome back, Honorable Deputy Minister. You have honored your word. Thank you for that.
No, Chair, you are right, Chair. I think colleagues who have asked about the board are correct. Yes, as the acting CEO has said, yes, there are, because it's a trust, Brand South Africa is a trust, then there are trustees who basically are a board. At the moment, the board's time expired at the end of May. So there is no board. There's only one person remaining out of what, 15? Out of 15 board members, only one is remaining whose term ends next year. But of course, that one board member can't correct. the process, of course, of appointing the board, the board is appointed by the president through a process that we undertake in the department. We do the advertising, etc., etc. Unlike other institutions, particularly your Chapter 9 or Chapter 10 institutions, in this instance, Parliament does not get involved in the appointment of the board. It's one area, of course, because there are certain powers in terms of the Trustees Act that resides with the board or with the trustees. And these powers can only be exercised by the executives if delegated and when delegated. Now, if you don't have a board, you are in a fix. You are in a serious fix. So we will be working very hard for the board to be established. There is a matter of the brand being linked to any party. Maybe let's first start by saying the party that won elections is the party that is governing. So the relationship of Brand SA to the party that I'm deployed to head this entity, it is by law. They will have a relationship with that party because it is a governing party. No question about it. But in government, not with the party at Luthuli House. There is no relationship by this in the party offices. Their relationship is with me as the minister deployed by that party. Their relationship with the president, of course, who's a key figure, they work with the president almost all the time, most of the time, in branding our country. They will work with all ministers. They'll also work with even members of the opposition as they visit various countries. Because what is key here is that indeed they are branding the reputation of the country to make us smell a little bit nicer in the international community. Which at times, as we have said, at times is a difficult job for them with all matters that from time to time might be cropping up in our political environment, social environment, including what has been referred to as xenophobia. Those are matters that from time to time will create difficulties for themselves. but they are not in office as Brand South Africa to serve the interest of a party. They are Brand South Africa to serve the interest of the country. Serve the interest of the country, not of a particular party, with an understanding that the governing party is in government. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair, and also thank you, Minister, for clarifying the questions that Minister has answered. I will not go into them. I will take some of the questions that, and then the Chief Marketing Officer of the country, she markets not only Brand SA, but the whole country is sitting right next to me, will answer all the questions about the research that we do and how does it influence. On the issue of the ambassadors, how do we recruit them and are they vetted? The answer is yes, they are vetted. How do we recruit them? We identify them. Some we identify them ourselves because of what they do, whether it is in sport or in whatever field. And as soon as we identify them, we engage them. And we've got agencies that vet them, if the vetting is in that sense, not the state security vetting, but the vetting in terms of the work that they do, the impact of that, how have they touched lives, how many lives, and how they have they changed the normal citizen's life in whatever that they do. And once you have met all those the categories, we are able to identify you as an ambassador. And let me also clarify that these ambassadors we are talking about are different from the DERCO ambassadors. Yes, the DERCO ambassadors are your real ambassadors. But nabo laba, they are excited. Yes, and then these ones, they also love it that they come to us, I want to be an ambassador. Then we check what you do and in what scale. And based on that, we are then able to identify you whether you are an ambassador. Then we have ambassadors. On the issue of marketing South Africa, do we create a platform or level the field and in terms of the product? I'm sure the CMO will touch into that. But yes, we do have a relationship with your DERCO. We have a relationship with DTI. We have a relationship with GCIS. We all work together because there is no messaging. Like when we deal with the issues of your key messaging about the country, we cannot, the right hand must know what the left hand is doing. But when it comes to the actual, the issue of the product, we have an agency that is under DTI, it's called Proudly South African. Then they deal with the issues of the type of products. But I'm sure a CMO will then, we will then act, yes. And also in terms of the presentation about how do other markets see us, we do have such a presentation, but because it is a long presentation, and that is a presentation that we actually presented in Japan. And we will see that after that particular presentation, you will see the investment or the investors coming into the country because we are honest. Remember, as much as we present, people also do their own homework, but we are able to show them that this is South Africa and this is how we are seen by markets, and that's a presentation that we can make available to say how are we then seen out there. And also on the issue of, I've touched on the issue of the relationship and also the issue of the our relationship with other like I have said with other whether it's private sector, like I said in the presentation that our stakeholder will be your, they are divided into three. We've got business, we've got government, and we've got civil society, and we have a relationship, and we are accessible to anybody that want to see us. If it's a private sector wanting to see us about some about investment, we go listen, and we see that it's in line with the country. Like Minister has said, we check the SONA, the seven priorities, how is this adding value into the country, then we take that proposition. But we will never, ever, as Brand South Africa, represent any department without us talking to that department. That is why we've got a wing that deals with government. That particular wing will have those discussions. By the time we start having posters going out there, like with xenophobia, there were a lot of posters that we sent out there, and there were adverts on television and even at the airport as you come in to say South Africa, we welcome everybody, and explaining as long as the processes, all processes are met, all those things that we do, we immediately zoom into that particular department. Like for instance, with the issues of the visa, us. We were already in discussion with the Department of Home Affairs to say what is it that we can do to make this country of ours accessible. And of course, making sure that we respect the laws of the country and make sure that everything is done accordingly. There is no overlap between the work that we do and the work that Derco is doing, because, like I say, we work together. So the people at Derco, they have a specific mandate when they are there. And as we all know, in a mission abroad, there will be different departments that have different roles. There will be your home affairs doing whatever they need to do. There will be your defense attaché doing what they need to do. Okay. Then there is us, because it is our mandate to market the country, and we are able to even tell some of the investors that actually we have an embassy here. If this is what you want, go here, and this is what you need to then do. And also the issue of also opening doors for South Africans who want to invest abroad and see that all those type, all the prescripts that are there are adhered to. I will give the CMO to just quickly touch as we get off this stage.
On a question, do we create platforms that assist South Africans and enable them to brand themselves as South Africans, or to even showcase the work that they do? Yes, we do. So what we do with Play Your Part program, we actually really go to the outreach in communities. We encourage what we call content sharing. We do a call to action that says to people, share with us your stories, your unique stories that can actually help us tell a better South African story. And what we have done, one competition where we did that, we actually ended up doing a mini-series, a documentary series of South Africans that are entrepreneurs. So in the creative arts space, because one would appreciate the fact that South Africa's creative pillar is one of the strongest from a USP point of view, from a competitive advantage. So we then showcased that ordinary people that were showcased on the BBC platform, BBC TV, Global, the CNNs of this world, where we've had actually people saying to us, really, do these guys come to South Africa? So it varies from the food that we eat, the creation of a material, so you like Duma classes, that who have just blossomed and inspired the Brazil, for instance. So we tap onto those known and unknown. In fact, some of them, we take them from the spaces where they are not known and they become known. In January, when the team went to West Davos, we took a chef to cook for the investors, for the global. And this, we've been doing this for almost, this is the third time, where we profile different cuisine to showcase that when we say South Africa inspires new and different ways, we really mean that. Which then leads me to the second question. If one were to say, what is South Africa in a sentence? I always say South Africa is a country with potential, a country that inspires new and different ways. And why do we say that? It's because we've got a diverse economy. We cannot say we limit ourselves to gas only. We cannot say we only have cocoa. Our economy base is so diverse that we look at film and we say, how many South Africans do you know that have inspired the world? And we ask South Africans, do you still not believe that we do inspire new ways? Who knew that Trevor Noah could be the host of The Daily Show? Do you still doubt that you as a country you inspire new ways? Do you still doubt Mom Esther when she goes and she does it and she paints a BMW in Sindebele? So those are small little things. And there are so many Mom Esthers. There are so many Trevor Noahs that when you speak about whether they're in film, in creative arts, or in sports, they inspire these new and different ways, because they're different, because we have a broad talent as South Africans. So what we normally say to people is that let's move from the possibility side of things, because we're no longer a possible country. We are a country that makes things happen, which is our bravery to inspire positive action. So I hope I've answered that. And then from the research, we actually measure a lot of research. Just to highlight on the few that speak to the reputational, we do a study, we conduct a study that we commission in 16 markets, and we target 3,000 investors, and those are global markets. We ask them, what are the brand associations of South Africa? So we dissect it from the brand construct to say, when you think of South Africa, what comes to mind? And from a brand association point of view, what does it mean? What comes to mind? And you'll be surprised that actually what comes to mind correlates with the GDP analysis, which says mining, agriculture,
South Africa is simply associated with those sectors. And then you find that your services, your financial services, your hotel industries and all those things, they are starting to grow, which then says to Brand South Africa, how do you take that picture and change your strategy? We infuse those findings and then we shift our tactics with marketing. We then say, let's not talk about a land of possibility, you know, from agriculture to mining. No, let's tell the world that we are in an innovative country. We've got the first doctor who did a 3D ear surgery. Our efforts now are going to focus more on the innovation and technology. That's what we say when we're reviving a brand, which is also a priority in the SONA speech this year. How do we revive and move this brand from where it was, so that the associations are more compelling, they're more fresh, and then that eventually will attract investors. So we take all of those, investor perception, there's Bloom Consultancy, they also look at the brand equation, so it's look at the equity of a brand. When we speak of brand, we say association, then there's equity. How strong are we from a brand value? We have dropped, we do that through brand finance, by the way. Yeah, we have dropped, we used to be 227 billion brand USD, but now we are 220. It's a significant drop. It is, but we track that because when we talk of brand dynamics, we say what has driven the volume of that brand and the value of that brand, and we do it that way as well. We look at the population, we also look at the brand value. In terms of private sector, we believe that the studies like SA RepTrack, so there's a reputation institution, it's a research. It measures the role of brands within the countries in elevating or enhancing the nation brand image. So what we do, we then did an analysis. We hosted a nation brand forum. We called on different companies, and we said, here we are Brand South Africa. Help us to promote this country in a better light. And the feedback was very positive. This year in January, we had APSA coming with us. We had Old Mutual coming with us. We had MultiChoice saying we are joining this bus, the bus that's going to show the world that South Africa really is a country that inspires new ways. And it doesn't end there. We are also collaborating with BLSA as a stable that has a lot of private sector underneath. We've come up with mini documentaries where we showcase how Xerox, what role do they play? They play in the community and so forth. So we do have that relationship. We are also a partner to the Marketing Association of South Africa because we believe they house people that are marketing the brands like your MTN, but those people actually should be partnering with Brand SA. And we had the Marketing Achievers Awards where we're celebrating the marketing excellence and celebrating the brands that resonate with the South African identity. So your brands like your MTN, your brands like the one that won was SAP, because they play a crucial role as well in dealing with the matters of the social economic issues. For instance, the woman abuse. They came up with that campaign. So we recognize proactively and say, we see you, we salute you, and then in future, can we do collaborative work so that there's more impact? So those, I think, are some of the issues that were raised that I'm responding to. I've covered. Some you have. Yes, I have covered. Thank you.
I'm suggesting that we must have a 5 minutes leg stretch whilst they are bringing in lunch. And I'm also proposing to you members that we must have a working lunch so that we must be able to catch up with time. If you are in agreement, say so.
Agreed.
Yeah, let's have 5 minutes next stretch.
It made me to
read. That's why we gave you those documents long before. Long before.
It was very nice. So it was nice. And also, Dr. Masuna had asked me to say, when I am the political principal, speak on TV, and then when I come, so we dealt with.
Good.
Your first time.
Good.
That's very nice. But then they said they not adopted. They are contesting the statistics. Minister Rob, they are in unemployment.
Yeah, he was talking about that. So then President said, we must next week come back. So we must go and correct him. Then we must also ask Mr. Chantel, what is it? Even my position. Then we beef it up. The one of women, it was dismissed. Actually, the person was not interested. They cut the statement of last year. They wanted us. But then the one of NHI, we agreed that we're going to take it. Yeah. Oh, then we agreed on the election. It's going to be in September. 2021.
I'm on the board of MBA.
From there.